Good evening, everyone. Tonight's learning is dedicated to Nishma Sima Yeta Bas Ovadia. And tonight we're going to have the privilege of studying together Parshas Yisrael. Parshas Yisrael is a very, very important parasha because in Parshas Yisrael we have Kabbalah Satorah, which is one of the major events in Jewish history. Obviously, it's Kabbalah Satorah. We read the Aseres Hadibros, which is something we do three times a year. Parshas Yisrael, Parshas Veschanan, and on Shavuos. Now, when we in the past discussed an interesting halachic shir, you can take a look on the website where we talked about the controversy about to stand or to sit for Aseres Hadibros. Some people bedafka stand, some people bedafka sit. It's the difference between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. We discussed with Moshe's tshuva, Chacham Uvadia as a tshuva. We talked about all that from a halachic standpoint. But there is obviously a lot to learn from just the idea of Kabbalah Satorah, which is what made us who we are today, the Torah that we learn to up till today. So that's one of the major events in Parshas Yisrael. And another main event that we'll probably spend more time on this evening is Yisrael's relationship and Yisrael's involvement in Klal Yisrael and the differences that Yisrael made, and even a little bit of Yisrael's relationship. Yisrael in Moshe Rabbein on this week's parish is the example of father-in-law, son-in-law type of relationship. And you know, putting aside all the father-in-law and mother-in-law jokes, we're going to learn from this week's parasha, there's a lot to learn in the relationship. And it's a complicated relationship between fathers-in-laws and sons-in-laws. And we'll learn a lot from how Moshe Rabbeinu and Yisrael got along in a very, very beautiful way. And we'll learn a lot about that as well. So let's start off in the beginning, opening psukim of this week's parasha. And the Torah tells us, Vayishma Yisrael. Yisrael hears something. Who is Yisrael? So the Torah describes Yisrael. Who is he? So he's a Chayin Midjan. He's a priest from Midjan. He's a priest from a foreign land called Midjan. Who is he, says the Pasuk? Chayin Moshe. He's a father-in-law of Moshe. So Reb Chaim Kanevsky points out that very, very often in this parasha, Yisrael is referred to in a couple of ways. Sometimes he's referred to as Yisrael. Sometimes he's referred to as Chayin Moshe. And sometimes he's referred to as Yisrael Chayin Moshe. So sometimes he's referred by all different names. Reb Chaim Kanevsky points out, and it's good to keep your eye on it when you go through the psukim. Reb Chaim Kanevsky points out he's given each title dependent upon what he's doing. Meaning, he'll be called Yisrael when he's just doing his own thing. He'll be called Chayin Moshe when he's doing something that reflects his relationship as Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law. And sometimes he'll be both, Yisrael and Chayin Moshe. So we'll try to point out, as we go through the psukim, why sometimes he's called Yisrael and sometimes he's called Chayin Moshe. So in this pasuk, he's Yisrael and he's Chayin Moshe. All that Moshe did to the Jews, all that Hashem did to Moshe, the Jewish people. So we all know that Yisrael does not make his first appearance in this week's parasha. He appears obviously earlier, but in the psukim, in the actual Chumash, the first time we see Yisrael is in Parasha Shemais, when Moshe Rabbeinu is a fugitive. Moshe Rabbeinu is a fugitive in the land of Midian. He shows up at a well. And the girl, he helps out his future wife. And the father says to him, why did you go invite him in? Why did you go invite him? And they chase down Moshe Rabbeinu. They bring Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately back into the house. And Moshe Rabbeinu marries one of Yisrael's daughters. So the other time where we were introduced to Yisrael was actually in a Medrash. Famous Medrash. Medrash tells us that when Paroi and Parsha Shemoi sat down to have a meeting, had to deal with the Jewish problem, which is a meeting, sadly, that has taken place other times in Jewish history, had to deal with the Jewish problem. So at that meeting, we know it was Paroi, Yisrael, and Iyov. So Chazal tell us in the Medrash, when Paroi basically said, I want to obliterate the Jewish people, Yisrael ran away. Yisrael left, he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle hearing that the Jewish people would be destroyed. And there are many different pshatim of what Yisrael couldn't hand. Was it because he had such a moral compass and he couldn't imagine killing a people? But the other pshat that they say is that Yisrael couldn't imagine the breach in Akaras HaToiv. At the end of the day, the Jewish people were the descendants of Yosef. Yosef saved the country. Yosef single-handedly, economically saved Mitzrayim from being destroyed. So Akaras HaToiv dictates that a person has to behave a certain way. Yisrael lived the life of Akaras HaToiv, which is why when Yisrael finds out that there was some man that helped their daughters, he was livid. How can you not bring him home? Invite him for supper, Akaras HaToiv. Yisrael lived Akaras HaToiv, which is another element that we all as Yidden need to learn from Yisrael. Because again, Yisrael is the outsider. Very often in life, we'll talk about that in the shir tonight, so very often in life, sometimes we learn lessons from an outsider, from the non-Jew, from the guy who's not like us. he has a different vision, an outsider. Very often, people know that when they're working on a project, doctors and other things, sometimes they want to get what's called a fresh pair of eyes. Someone who's not involved, someone who hasn't seen it yet. So Yisrael was an outsider. Yisrael had an outside look. But one of the things we can learn from Yisrael, even as an outsider, even that as a Yid, was his deep sense of Hakaras HaTov. So Yisrael saw that the Jewish people did so much for Paroi, and then he hears that Paroi is going to try to kill them. Yisrael couldn't handle it, and he ran away. So there seems to be a stira in Chazal. Chazal tells us that because Yisrael was so fantastic, he was zeicha not to have a son-in-law who's Moshe Rabbeinu, but he was zeicha to have great-grandchildren that sat in the Lishkas Hagozes. So the question is, what did Yisrael do amazingly? So one member Chazal, Gemara and Saita says, was because Yisrael ran away from that meeting with Paroi. Which again, you have to remember, that made Yisrael have to then flee to Midian, because he was a fugitive in Mitzrayim. He can't just run away from the king. So that put his life in a difficult situation. That's one member of Chazal. But there's another member of Chazal, Gemara and Sanhedrin, tells us that the reason why Yisrael was zeichet to have been a bon of Yoishvin, but Lishkas HaGozis, was because that sense of Hakaras HaTov that he said to Moshe, come, you should have brought Moshe Rabbeinu back. So which one is it? So the Marsha writes, it's a combination factor. The Marsha writes, because it's very possible that Yisrael would have been zeichet to great things, but his children would have not became part of Klal Yisrael. Because we know, like Amon and Moav were blocked out of Klal Yisrael, so like Kidmu Eschem Balechem, because they didn't have a sense of Hakaras HaTov. So therefore, the combination of the fact that he ran away from Paroi and he had a sense of Hakaras HaTov, that's why he merited to have children that sit, well, that would sit in the Lishkas Hagozes. Medrash tells us that Yisrael had many names. Yisrael had many names. So his original name was Yeser. After he was Megaya, they added Vav. So why did he add the letter Vav? What's the Vav in Yisrael? So the Medrash writes, because the Vav stands for the Yud, and the Yud is the Yud Dibros, the 10 Dibros, and the Tof Reish Vav of his name Yisrael is the mitzvahs that Yisrael was Mekabel when he became Jewish. That's how Yisrael got his name. The Yud and the Tof Reish Vav represent the mitzvahs. The Pardes Yosef explains that the reason why he got the Vav in his name is because the Vav signifies life. Yisrael was living a non-Jew. It's not a life. Now when he switched over to a Jewish life, so now he became a Yid. Now he has a life. He has a chias. He has a purpose. He has a tafkid. He has a reason for waking up in the morning. And therefore his name switched over from the letter Vav, because the Vav represents the Ois of Chayim. So we all know the famous Gemara, Chazal, Rashi quotes it on the page over here. Vayishma Yisrael. Yisrael heard. What did Yisrael hear? What did Yisrael hear that motivated him to come join the Jewish people? So Rashi quotes from the Gemara, even though it's not exactly a perfect quote. The Gemara says, "Mashmu Hashamu Ubo." What did he hear? Kriyas Yamsof u'Melchemes Amalek. He heard Kriyas Yamsof u'Melchemes Amalek. The Gemara in Zvachim has quite a few opinions of what exactly did he hear, but Rashi quotes that he heard two events in Jewish history: Melchemes Amalek and Kriyas Yamsof. So the question that all the Achrayim grapple with was, what was so special, so unique about those two events that were the impetus for Yisrael to come join Klal Yisrael? So the Nesiv HaShalom, the Slam Rebbe, has a very beautiful pshat. The Nesiv HaShalom explains that if you think about it, really Kriyas Yamsuf should have been enough. Kriyas Yamsuf was unbelievable. It says in the pasuk, everyone saw Kriyas Yamsuf. So the inspiration that Yisrael took from Kriyas Yamsuf alone would have been enough to motivate him to join Klal Yisrael. But what happened? Yisrael said to himself, Melchemes Amalek. Yisrael said to himself, how could it be that after the entire world saw Kriyas Yamsuf, Amalek had the audacity, the azos, the chutzpah, to come and attack the Jewish people? Said the Slam Rebbe, it must mean that a person can be inspired, but if he doesn't act on the inspiration, he'll lose it. How many of us have been inspired by a speech, by a drasha, by a shir, and by the time we leave the shir, the inspiration is gone? So Yisrael said to himself, you know why? Mashmu Hashamu Bo. What made Yisrael get up and join Klal Yisrael? It was the fact that after a Kriyas Yamsuf, there can still be an Amalek. Yisrael said to himself, if I wait any longer, I'm going to be like Amalek. From the fact that after a Kriyas Yamsuf, Amalek still had the audacity to attack, it means if you don't seize the moment, if you don't jump on the inspiration, if you dilly-dally after being inspired, you will not be inspired any longer. You'll lose the inspiration. And therefore he said, that's it, Atkan. I have to go, I need to do something. We often speak about this in many different settings, especially during Yomim Neroyim and Elul, that if a person gets inspired to improve, he needs to do something with it. You can't just leave inspiration hanging over your head. You get inspired, do something. A person gets inspired, he gets excited about something, put it to action. A person gets inspired to give tzedakah, write the check now. A person gets inspired to learn more, get the chavrusa now, get the shir now, buy the sefer now. Don't expect inspiration to last from tomorrow and the next day. It's gone. It burns out. And therefore says the Islam Rebbe, that's why Yisrael said it's got to be now. Mashmu Hashem Baba. What made him come now? Why couldn't he wait, dilly dally, get to it next week? No, because if you can lose the inspiration like the world did, he was afraid he would also. There's another pshat that I like to say over, which I heard B'Shem Rabbi Soloveitchik, a similar idea, is that what Yisrael was looking for wasn't just for an all-powerful God. Yisrael was looking for a religion that has a relationship between the people and the God. If you look at in all the miracles that took place so far in the Jewish people, let's say for the 10 Makkos. The 10 Makkos were unbelievable miracles, so it definitely showed, kav yochol, Hashem can flex his muscles. But Yisrael didn't just want a powerful God. Yisrael wanted to see, I want a religion where the people have faith in the God, and the God provides for them. The 10 Makkos, the Jewish people took a back seat to. We just sat back, and we enjoyed the 10 Makkos, but we didn't have to do anything. There was nothing on our end that required us to do anything that had to prove our loyalty. All we had to do was sit back and enjoy. Then came the mon. The mon, yeah, there was a little bit of moon in the mon, but the two times where Klai Yisrael had to roll up their sleeves and prove and show their loyalty was Kriyas Yam Suf. They came to the Yam Suf, they had to jump in. They had to take the first leap of faith, that first step they had to do. Melchemes Amalek, Klal Yisrael had to do it themselves. They couldn't just have a miracle that that the war would fight itself. They had to go through the motions of Teva and showing that they believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what said Yisrael was so excited by seeing that the Jewish people proved their loyalty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It wasn't just HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs miracles and they sit back and watch the show. No, they have to show, they prove their loyalty as well. The Rabbi Yosef Salant had a different spin on this. He wanted to say that could be Kriyas Yam Suf wasn't enough of a selling point. He says because it could be Kriyas Yam Suf, people can claim that was Moshe Rabbeinu's power. Again, obviously Kfira, but maybe Kriyas Yam Suf was Moshe Rabbeinu's doing. And therefore, that I'm not yet proven where Hashem lies. Therefore, says Rabbi Yosef Salant, that's why Melchemes Amalek, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't even involved at all. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go to battle. And therefore, that's why you have the combination of Kriyas Yam Suf and Melchemes Amalek. I would say it a little differently. I would say maybe because there is a Ramban in last week's parasha. The Ramban pointed out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a big wind come right before Kriyas Yam Suf. Why is that? So the Ramban writes, so this way HaKadosh Baruch Hu left room for the non-believers to say, oh, it's Teva. There's still people out of Yom HaZeh who think Kriyas Yam Suf was a natural occurrence. So it could be Kriyas Yam Suf alone wasn't enough. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Melchemes Amalek. Melchemes Amalek is, again, even though when it comes to war, meaning, what's interesting about Kriyas Yam Suf and Melchemes Amalek, they each have a maila and a chasaron. Kriyas Yam Suf is, it looks like Yad Hashem, while others say, no, it's natural. Melchemes Amalek is a war where the underdog won, but whenever you have a war, like we have by Hanukkah, you always have those people who say, nah, it happens sometimes. So it could be those two actions each complement each other. When you have two things like that, then Yisrael said, okay, two things is already enough of a raya. That it's the real deal. Then the Chassam Sofer points out something interesting over here about Yisrael. We mentioned earlier Yisrael was a defector. Yisrael was at the meeting and he ran away. So what Yisrael learned over here was that we all know that Kriyas Yam Suf was all Mida Keneged Mida, right? We know Chazal tells us that each Mitzri died based upon his level of sinning. Right, some people were tzalu kaiferes b'mayim adirim. Some people sunk, some people floated. So Yisrael said to himself, "Oyvei, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so medactic with every person, so I'm going to get into trouble because I very nice. I didn't join the meeting, but all I did was run away. I didn't make a difference. So therefore, he decided that he's got to come and he needs to fix it. And then the Chassam Sofer says one step further. Amalek, what did Amalek do? Amalek traveled for what? Amalek traveled to go attack Bnei Yisrael. So he says, oh, Yisrael had an idea. And this is interesting. Chassam Sofer learned that Yisrael knew how Moshe Rabbeinu was judging the people even before he showed up. And Yisrael said, oh, if I see Amalek went out of his way to go harm the Jewish people, I got to go out of my way to help the Jewish people. If I have a way to help the Jewish people, I have this new idea of how they should run their judicial system, I have to get up and help them. Even though you read the Psukim, it sounds like from the Psukim that Yisrael only found about it when he showed up. But this is how the Chassam Sofer explains it. Reb Shlomo Mibelz says something also very important, that Yisrael learned from Amalek. Chazal tell us, the Rishayim tell us, Sefer Chinuch, Ramban, and others tell us, that what Amalek did was completely ridiculous. Amalek attacking the Jewish people after Yetzias Mitzrayim made no sense. Because the entire world was blown away, was enamored, amazed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's power. And then comes along Amalek and says, I'm not impressed. So we all know the Sefer Chinuch, Rashi quotes it, also the famous Moshul about the hot bath, that after Amalek came, they cooled down the hot bath. Because at that time, the entire world had a fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Taina the Shalmi Bells, so it made no sense what Amalek did. He says, you think Amalek would have asked his friends, guys, I'm curious, what do you think? Do you think it's a good idea for me to attack the Jewish people? They were all telling him, you're crazy. The Jewish people are so powerful. So he says, Yisri said to himself, you know, if I go around asking my friend, do you think I should go convert to Judaism? I said, what are you, crazy? You're the priest in Midian. What are you going to go to the Jewish people? So he says, that was his musa from Amalek. His musa from Amalek was, is that I'm not going to ask people what to do. The same way Amalek did what he wanted without asking for consent. And without gathering a popularity, he just did it in a negative way. I'm going to do what I think is right. I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to get consensus from my friends. I don't care. I'm just going to do what I want, and I'm going to do what I believe in, and I'm going to learn from Amalek. So I guess if you say it this way, maybe we also have to learn a little bit from Amalek. We live in a life, we're always so concerned what Yenem is going to say. I want to do the right thing, but what's Yenem going to say? So if I want to do the wrong thing, then I should be concerned what Yenem is going to say. It's a chalasha. But I know there are a lot of people, they want to do the right thing, they want to become frumer, but they're always afraid. What are the neighbors going to say? What are the family going to say? So therefore they hold back from being frumer. So we should learn from Amalek, not like that. The same way Amalek had no problem attacking the Jewish people, even though all his friends would have told him not to, we have to do the right thing. And that's what Yisrael did. Yisrael did the right thing, even though he knew he wasn't going to get much favor in the eyes of his friends. So what happens? The Pasuk tells us that Yishma Yisrael heard. Who's Yisrael? Choyin Midjan. He's a priest from Midjan. So the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Abshalma Gansfield wrote a sefer on Chumash called Apirion. It's a beautiful sefer. So he asks a kasha. Many achrayim have this kasha. We know there's a halacha that you're not supposed to remind a Baal Tshuva or anyone about past mistakes. You're not supposed to bring up their past history. So asks the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, so why does the Torah tell us he's a Chayin Midyan? That's such an insult. You're going to call the guy a priest. He's on his way to convert to Judaism. So he says, no, the Pasuk is giving us a beautiful, beautiful compliment to Yisrael. Right, very often people convert, and you don't know why they're converting. What's their agenda? What's up their sleeve? Are they doing it for the perks? Are they doing it for what? Well, why do they want to become Jewish? So therefore, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Yisrael had absolutely zero motivation to join the Jewish people. Kavod, he had all the kavod he wanted in Midian. Money, he had all the money he wanted in Midian. Power, all the power he had in Midian. So why would you want to come to the Jewish people? Zok to Torah, it was a raya that he was 100% Lashma. Therefore, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, writing that he was a Chayin Midyan was not an insult. It was the biggest compliment in the world. It was showing us that he was 100% legitimate, because why else would he join the Jewish people? None of the perks that many people would think of would apply to Yisrael. So the Pasuk tells us that Yisrael comes, and he heard Eis Kol Asher Asa Lekim LeMoshe. All that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Moshe, Uli Yisrael Amoy, and for the Jewish people. That why? Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. So again, there's a lot of kashas on the actual structure of the pasuk, but I want to focus on a beautiful thought from the Chidah. The Chidah points out that Yisrael was a little hesitant. Yisrael said to himself, I don't know. Maybe the Jewish people don't take Gabriel. Maybe the Jewish people won't accept me. But says the Chidah, Vayishma Yisrael, Yisrael heard what? Eitz kol asher asa elikim lemoshe uli Yisrael amoy. So he points out over here, that means that Yisrael Amoy is referring to the idea of the Erev Rav. That Moshe Rabbeinu accepted the Erev Rav. And therefore he said to himself, what? If Moshe Rabbeinu took the Erev Rav, so then I think I can also be accepted. And therefore he said that even though I was a very big Eved Avodah Zarah, I was the head of Avodah Zarah, the top expert in Avodah Zarah. If Moshe Rabbeinu took the Erev Rav, I think he'll take me also, and therefore I'm going to come and join Klal Yisrael. The Chidah has another vort. The Chidah says that the Lashon Elokim is Midas Hadin. So the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu lost the right to be a Kohen. He was stripped of the right to be a Kohen, and he was given the Leviah. Why? Because he hesitated to go to Mitzrayim. So he points out the Chidah, we're going to learn in a second, that Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu divorced his wife. That Moshe Rabbeinu, when Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he got the message to go to Mitzrayim, so he packed up his donkey, he went with his wife and he went with his two kids. So we all know, we spoke about this in Parashat Shmos, I think at least 1 year we spoke about it, that Moshe Rabbeinu had to go back to Yisrael to ask permission, because he made a deal with his father-in-law that he's not going to leave without his permission. So I pointed out to someone that you see from over here that the right thing is that a person who's leaving, especially if you work for your father-in-law and you live near your in-laws, the right thing is that you should ask, not permission, but you should mention to them that you're leaving. But you also see that a good father-in-law sees a good opportunity for his son-in-law and daughter should also not let them go. Meaning Yisrael could have said, no, I'm not letting you go. But Yisrael was a smart man. He saw this is a great opportunity for his son-in-law, Moshe Rabbeinu, to become something bigger than a shepherd of Midian. So he let him go. So in Ruth, Moshe Rabbeinu meets up with Aaron, and Aaron says to him, what are you doing? Why are you coming down to Mitzrayim with your family? Let your family stay here. So Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu gave his wife a get. And now when she returns for Matan Torah, so he takes her back. So the cash is, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have been a Kohen, he wouldn't be allowed to marry. There's an Isser of Machzor Gushasai. So he says that's Pshat of the Pasuk. Because Elohim, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu stripped Moshe Rabbeinu of his Kohuna status, that's why he was able to remarry his wife now that when she comes back into the picture. That's another Vart from the Chida. Okay, so what happens in the Pasuk? It says that Vayikach Yisrei Choyse Moshe, Yisrei takes. Now who's Yisrei? Choyse Moshe. So here it makes sense to call Yisrei Choyse Moshe, because here he's acting like a father-in-law. Why? Because he's now traveling back with Tzipora, who's his daughter-in-law, who's Eishes Moshe, the wife of Moshe, Achash Shiluchea, after Moshe Rabbeinu sent her away. So, Pasuk says, the Pasuk says that he sent her away, Achash Shiluchea. So first of all, why does the Torah call Tzipora Eishes Moshe? We know that already. Why is Tzipora Eishes Moshe? So before that, I heard a gevaldik gevart from Rabbi Eitan Feiner. He said that, you know, we know in Shidduchim, very often people marry opposites because they're supposed to complement your chesroinus, right? So he says, so where is Tzipora complement Moshe Rabbeinu? So he says, Tzipora, Medrash says Tzipora got her name from a bird. A bird sings a lot. So he points out Moshe Rabbeinu's perhaps only flaw we can think of was his ability to speak. He was a chvat pen, a chvat lashon. Singing probably wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu's greatest quality. So he married a woman like Tzipora who had much more of a koyach hapeh, and she would complement his chesroinus. It's something interesting to think about. So we know that, I mentioned earlier that the pasuk says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was coming down with the family, so Aaron HaKohen told him, what are you doing? Why are you bringing the family down to Mitzrayim? Is not enough Jews that suffer in Mitzrayim? So the kasha is that Moshe Rabbeinu had two sons. Those two sons wouldn't have had to work to Mitzrayim anyways because he was from Shevet Levi. So the Sifsei Chachamim writes, Enachanami, the two boys could have came down, but he was really saying that Tzipporah should go back home because he didn't want Tzipporah coming down to Mitzrayim because maybe she'd have to work in Mitzrayim. So I saw that Reb Shteinman has a kasha. He says, I don't understand. So why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu go down with the boys and tell Tzipora to go back home? So the Teretz is Pasha. Do you think Moshe Rabbeinu would be able to get anything done if he's watching his two kids the whole time? Well, what type of leader would Moshe Rabbeinu be? He's going to sit in Mitzrayim. He's going to have to be busy with the two boys. He's going to have to be babysitting and then having to be metapel with them, right? I know. I have this chus to get to sometimes watch my children. He can't get too much done. So Moshe Rabbeinu would have never been able to be Moshe Rabbeinu if he was by himself with two kids. So either Tzipora comes down with him or the two boys go with Tzipora. It wasn't even a possibility that Tzipora would go back to Midian and the kids would stay with Moshe Rabbeinu. However, when it came to Kabbalah Satira, Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, I want my kids here for Kabbalah Satira. Moshe Rabbeinu said, this they can't miss. It's interesting. They missed everything else, maybe. At least according to one sheet. But Kabbalah Satira, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I need my kids to be part of Kabbalah Satira. They got to come back. So the Sifsei Chachamim points out like that. So the kasha is, what was Moshe Rabbeinu so worried about? The two boys would have never had to have worked anyway. So one answer the Mefarshim would give is that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I don't want my sons to have to watch Jews suffer. Why should my sons come down to Mitzrayim just to watch Achenu B'nai Yisrael suffer? Why? I don't need them to see that. Why should they have to be exposed to that? Why should my children have to come down to Mitzrayim just to watch Jews being beaten? Let them go back to Midian. They say, Rebbech Ber Libowitz, used to read the newspaper every single day until 1933. After 1933, when Hitler took over in Germany, again, the Baruch Berl was in communist. Communist was in Poland. Poland, they didn't get the Nazis till 1939. But Rebbe Baruch Berl said he stopped reading the newspaper because he couldn't stomach it. He couldn't read every single day, hearing all the tsaris about what Hitler wanted to do and all the anti-Semitism taking place in Germany. He couldn't handle it. Even though, again, it didn't affect him. He lived in Poland. They were in Germany. But that's what it means to care about another yid. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu said to his sons, why should I expose my children to see this? I don't want them to be there. I don't want them to see what they don't need to see. And Moshe Shtenberg has a different pshat, an interesting pshat. He points out that Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that if Yisroi's daughter and Yisroi's grandchildren will come down to Mitzrayim, you have to remember, Moshe Rabbeinu and Paroi have a history. Moshe Rabbeinu was technically a fugitive. Yisroi has a history with Paroi because Yisroi was a defector. Yisroi ran away. So Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid if he's going to bring his children and his wife down, it could be Paroi will take revenge on Yisroi's daughter and Moshe's wife and Yisroi's grandchildren. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what, maybe it's best if everyone goes back to Midjan, it's safer there, let me go down myself, and I'll deal with Paroi. So it says in the Pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu had two children. So Tzipporah comes, I want to just point out over here, beautiful vort. It says in the Pasuk that Tzipporah is Eishes Moshe. Why is the Torah reminding us that Tzipporah is Eishes Moshe? So Moshe Shtenbuch points out, my father told me this vort this week, a beautiful vort, that Moshe Shtenbuch says that Eishes Moshe, because you have to remember, Tzipporah did not come from any very religious family. She came from a Midjani family. She was raised by the priest of Midjan. So good, she married Moshe Rabbeinu. What type of upbringing do you think those two boys are going to have? On top of it, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't even around to be mechanech them. So Zokta Pasik, no. Tzipora, she's Eishes Moshe. She raised those children. That house was an Eishes Moshe house. That house was not Tzipora, the daughter of Midjan. No. Tzipora was an Eishes Moshe. She embodied, she taught, she was mechanech, those children with the values of an Eishes Moshe. But I saw another beautiful pshat quoted by I think his name was Rabbi Chanan Sirotskin. He said this in 1934 at a meeting. He said the following idea. He said, you know, people, Yisrael was coming to tell the Jewish people something so essential, which even today people need to hear. People often forget that rabbis also have families. Baruch Hashem, the Rabbanim have families and they have children and they have personal responsibilities as well. Many people feel that the rabbi is their personal, person. Right? You have a question at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're going to call the rabbi. You have an issue, you call the rabbi. Because what do you mean? I pay his salary. He doesn't mean you own the rabbi. He's not your eved. Just because you pay his salary. Zok the Pasuk, you have to remember, Moshe Rabbeinu also has a wife. Moshe Rabbeinu also has a life. He has children. He has responsibility. He has things he needs to do also. And he said this in 1934 to try to convince the Baal Batim to be more aware of this, to give money to help the rabbi live, and just to remind him that rabbis have lives also, they have families and they have responsibilities. I think it's such a beautiful message that sometimes people don't realize. You know, they need to speak to the rabbi, they need to speak to him at all costs, but you're forgetting. How do you know he doesn't have his own issues that he's dealing with at home? He has his own life, he has his own personal responsibilities. So it's a very important word, I think, that people often overlook. You know, people think Gedolim are here for me. You're here for me. What do you mean? You're here to serve me. So if I need you, if I want you, that's it. Everything stops. You know, you speak to old Rabbanim, you know, they always point out that the rabbi can never win, right? The rabbi goes away, and then he's not at an event that the Baal Batim forever mad at him. What do you want the guy to do? He scheduled time away, he went on vacation, and he's not around. He can't be at everything. You know, so rabbis often can't win. But it's an important yisoy that people often overlook the role of the rabbi. And it's not just your local rabbi. I think it's even gedolim. Right? People need to talk to a gadol. So that's it. I need to talk to a gadol so the whole world stops. Maybe the gadol has things he needs to do also. They're all human. Rabbis and gedolim are humans also. They have responsibilities. They have families. They have needs. And the fact that you need to speak to him, you know, people get upset. I can't get a hold of the rabbi. Maybe he's busy with something. Maybe he also has personal things to take care of. It's an interesting vort which was around in 1934. I think it's still around in 2020, in 2022. That's where I'm doing already. Okay, it's an interesting part. So what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu has two boys. What's Moshe Rabbeinu's son's name? So the first son, his name is Gershom. Okay, why? Ki ayisi gera yisi be'eretz nachira. Moshe Rabbeinu is reflecting his stay in Midian. He's saying that when I lived in Midian, I was a foreigner. Midian is not my native land. And then he has a second son, and he names the second son Eliezer. Why is he named his second son Eliezer? Because Elokei Avi Be'ezri, Hashem saved me, Vayatzi Leini Micher of Paroi, and he saved me from the sword of Paroi. So all the Mefarshim are bothered with the Kasha, and the Kasha is that this is out of chronological order. What happened first in chronological order? First, Moshe Rabbeinu was almost killed by Paroi Mitzrayim. That's Vayatzileni Mechera Paroi. Then Moshe Rabbeinu fled to Midjan. And in Midjan, he had some form of a life. He had a family, he had a job. And that's where he reminds himself, Kerayisi, the Eretz Nachriya. But it's out of order. It doesn't seem to fit chronological order. So the truth is, the Rishonim point out, and I think in either Parashas Ve'er, I think we mentioned it in that year, that the reason why it's out of order is because Moshe Rabbeinu was still scared of Paroi. Moshe Rabbeinu's fears of Paroi didn't end when he was saved in Mitzrayim. Very nice, he was saved in Mitzrayim. We know the famous Medrash is the sword hit his neck and it turned into a heart and he was able to run away, whatever. But Moshe Rabbeinu was still a fugitive. Moshe Rabbeinu was not out of the woods until the Pasuk says that those people that wanted to kill him died. So therefore, in chronological order, Moshe Rabbeinu was not yet up to the stage where he can say, Vayatzileni Mecherev Paroi. That only happened later. And that's why Gershom is first. The other answer that is given by the Bali Musar, I think the Chavetz Chaim says this, is because a Yid always has to remember first and foremost is Gera Yisi Beretz Nachriya. A Yid has to know that this is not where I belong. I don't belong here. First and foremost, before anything else, a Yid has to know I don't belong in Chutzlaz. I don't belong in Gauls. This is not my place. This is not where I belong. This is not my home. This is just a temporary residency. Now, this is something that we've grappled with as a nation, and we still continue to grapple with our complacency here in the Gullus, whether it be in Poland, up to the war, up to World War II, or in America now. We get very complacent. That's the tendency. Jews throughout the world, throughout history, throughout the centuries, have gotten complacent in many, many countries, and only to find out that they're going to be kicked out, and they were kicked out from those countries. So it's something we grapple with. And therefore, the Torah tells us, first and foremost, Afen Vissen, you have to know, Ger Hayisi Beretz Nachri. It's the first thing you have to know. There's an interesting discussion, the halacha over here from this story, about the names, because we know there was another person named Eliezer in Jewish history. Who was the other person named Eliezer in Jewish history? The other person named Eliezer was the Eved Avram. So there's the Mabit. The Mabit was the contemporary of the Beis Yosef. He was on the Beis Yosef's Bezdin in Tzfas. So the Mabit says that if someone names their son Eliezer, they have to know that they're naming him not because of Eliezer Eved Avram, but they're naming him because Eliezer Avram Moshe Rabbeinu's son. Because Eliezer was not a tzaddik, even though it sounded like in Bereshit he was a pretty good guy, but he wasn't a tzaddik. And therefore you don't want to name your son after a non-tzaddik. So therefore you should know that when you name your son Eliezer, you should name him Eliezer because of Moshe Rabbeinu's son's name. So the Chida has a kasha. So frek the Chida, so how did Moshe Rabbeinu have the right to name Eliezer Eliezer? If Eliezer till now was only one Eliezer, and that was Eved Avram Avinu. So the Chida says, no, Avram Avinu was allowed to do it because Avram Avinu named him Eliezer for a reason. He didn't name him Eliezer copying Eliezer Eved Avram. He named him Eliezer because Elokei Avi Be'ezri, because of Hashem Hamo'ara. He named him that because of what happened, and that's why he was allowed to name him that name. The Chasam Sofer says that before Matan Torah, people used to name after Rishoyim. Interesting concept. Because the Ritva and Yuma has a kasha. How do we have the name Yishmael? Now we know Yishmael is not so popular maybe today, but Yishmael was a Tana, maybe Yishmael Oimer. So why was he allowed to name Yishmael? So the Ritva and Yuma gives two answers. One answer he says is that we know there's a shaila in the Gemara whether or not Yishmael did tshuva. So if you hold Yishmael did tshuva, so then it's not so shver a name for Yishmael. And the other answer the Ritva gives is that Hashem gave him the name, so Hashem can do it. It's interesting, in Eretz Yisrael today, it's very popular, the name Nimrod. Many non-religious Jews have the name Nimrod, which is a shame because Nimrod was no tzaddik. But some religious, not again. I understand why they would name their son Nimrod. Nimrod hu ha yagibor. It represents physical gevura, but in the eyes of spirituality, you don't exactly want to name your kid something like Nimrod. He's not exactly a great tzaddik in Jewish history. Okay, so what happens? So Moshe Rabbeinu Yisrael comes to town. Vayova Yisrael choise Moshe uvan of Ishtael Moshe. So Yisroi, who's the Chayse Moshe, so here it makes sense to call him Chayse Moshe because he's acting as a father-in-law. Ubanov v'ishtoi el Moshe, he comes to Moshe. El Amidbar Hashem Uchan Hashem Alekim, he comes to the desert. Vayomer el Moshe. Someone tells Moshe, by the way, Ani Chayse Encha Yisroel Boilecha, are your father-in-law are coming with your wife and your two children. So how exactly did Yisroi get the word to Moshe Rabbeinu that he's coming to visit? He couldn't have exactly sent him an email or a WhatsApp, so how did he know? So there's an interesting medrash. The medrash says a couple different pshatim. The medrash says that one of the ways that Yisrael got the word to Moshe was through a messenger. He sent a letter. He sent an igeres. The Mechilta says he sent a letter. And the other pshat is that he sent it through a messenger. And the third pshat they bring down is that he shot an arrow with some form of message on it. And that was able to go over the Nani HaKavod. And that was able to get the message to Moshe Rabbeinu that your father-in-law is coming. So the Mefarshim have a kasha that how could you say that it was with a message? It says in the pasuk Vayoymer El Moshe. It was said to Moshe. If it was a letter, then it's not said to Moshe. Moshe read it. If it was a amira, it's usually bepeh. So it means someone said to Moshe. So Rashi says Vayoymer El Moshe Aidei Shliach. It was told by a messenger. But if you learn that he read it in a letter, so it's a little hard to know what it means, Vayoymer. The Medrash tells us, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't exactly go out to greet Yisrael until Hashem said to him, no, no, Yisrael is coming for the right reasons. Yisrael is coming L'Shem Shemayim. You should go out to visit him. So Reb Chatzkel Levinstein points out, you see a very important message over here. Now you have to understand, Moshe Rabbeinu was the leader of the Jewish people, but Yisrael was his father-in-law. And Yisrael was a very good father-in-law. Yisrael took him in. Yisrael gave him a job. Yisrael let him marry his daughter. So you would think that no matter what Yisrael's intention was, Moshe Rabbeinu should have to go out and be cordial. Says the Chatzkel Levinstein, no, you see from the Medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu would have not gone out to see Yisrael. The only reason why he went out is because Hashem said, no, you should take a go, because Yisrael is coming with Shem Shemayim. Yisrael is coming to become a guy. You should take a go out. But on that, without that, says the Chatzkel Levinstein, he wouldn't have gone out. Because, you have to be careful, you have to be wary what their agendas are. Very often we have people in our lives that are good people, but they have agendas. They want to convince us this, they want to persuade us in that area. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu needed permission, so to say, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to go out and greet his father-in-law. So the pasuk says, Vayetze Moshe, the kras choisnoi, he goes out to greet his father-in-law, Vayishtachu, and he bows down, Vayishakloi, and he kisses him. Vayishalu ishla reyehu l'shalom. He asks him how he's doing. Vayavohu ohala. He brings him into the tent. So Rashi says over here, Eni yedei mi ishtacha v'lemi. We don't know who bowed down to who. So Rashi says, it says in the Pasuk, Kishuayim ishla reyehu, it says a man to his friend. Who's called a man? Moshe Rabbeinu is called an ish. So Reb Shlomo Vilna points out, he says it has to be the Moshe Rabbeinu bowed down, bowed towards Yisrael. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amas high, and Yisrael was only 3 amas high. So if you have a 10 amas high guy and a 3 amas guy, so Moshe Rabbeinu had to have leaned down in order to be able to embrace Yisrael. But Reb Shach says, you see from this pasuk, you see from this Rashi, what does it mean to be an ish? Who's an ish? Who's the man? Right? We throw this around. He's the man. What does it mean to be a man? What's meant an ish? Zot Reb Shach, Moshe Rabbeinu was an ish. That's who gets that category, that title of ish. It's not a simple title just to be called, everyone today is the man. Oh yeah, he's the man. No. An ish is a choshen, a title that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. So we know there's a halach in Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea. Shulchan Aruch paskins that chayiv odom b'chvoid chomov. A person is obligated to honor his father-in-law. So the Nisei Kalim write also a mother-in-law. A person has an obligation to honor his in-laws. So the question is, where do we learn it out from? So if you look in the Torah, in the Nisei Kalim and Shulchan Aruch, they learn it out from a story with David and Shaul. That's how they know that you have to honor your father-in-law. So there's a Mechilta in this week's parasha. The Mechilta quotes this story. It says in the pasuk, Vayishtachu v'vayishak lo'i, Moshe Rabbeinu bowed down to Yisrael, he kissed him. So the Mechilta says, Mikan muchon adam l'kvoit chamav. A person should be ready, he should be prepared to honor his in-laws. So the Tari Tamima is very bothered. Why is this not the Mekar for Kibbut Chamav? Why do I learn it out from the fact that Shaul called David, David called Shaul Avi, called his father-in-law my father? That's a raya that you have to honor your father-in-law. Why do we learn from this Mechilta? The Mechilta says, Mikam Muchan Adam. So the Tari Tamima is very bothered. Why is this not the Mekar? So if I remember correctly, this was, we did this topic once many years ago also. I think Rabbi Avadi Yosef in the Tshuva points out that the Lashon in the Medrash doesn't say Chayiv. It says, Mikan Odom Muchan. You should get ready to prepare to honor your father. It doesn't say Chayiv. So that's why they don't like to learn from this Mechilta. But nonetheless, the concept of honoring our father-in-law is found in this week's parsha. Now obviously you don't honor your father-in-law because he changed your diapers when you were a baby. You don't honor your father-in-law because he gave you life. It's interesting, in this week's parasha, we have Kabbalah Tzivicha Vesimecha. We have the obligation to honor your parents, and you also have the obligation to honor your in-laws. It's a punct in the same parasha. It's very interesting. So they're not necessarily for the same reasons. You don't honor your father, you don't honor your in-laws because they gave you life. They didn't give you life. And so it's not necessarily for the same reason. But if you remember, and in many other shurim, we've talked about why exactly do we honor, even why is there even a mitzvah to honor one's parents? So the classical interpretation from the Rishonim, it's really Yushalmi, is because they gave you life. That's why you have to honor them, because they put you onto this planet. And that's why many paiskim hold halacha l'maisa. There was an interesting tshuva many years ago, written to Reb Zilberstein. Someone asked Reb Zilberstein about a very sad story about a boy, about a child that was put up for adoption by his biological parents, and he was in a foster home, and that's where he was raised the bulk of his life. And then his foster parents, then he finally found out about his biological parents, and he wanted to go see his biological parents, and his foster parents didn't let him. So the question is, who's his loyalty to? Is his loyalty to his biological parents or his loyalty to his foster parents? Now, obviously, there's a lot of emotions involved in this question. His biological parents didn't provide for him. They couldn't provide for him. They gave him up for whatever, adoption. So, Zelberstein Paskins, halacha l'maisa, his biological parents still are his parents. And I tell this to people, even if parents are not good parents, halavai, all parents should be fantastic parents. But even if you never have stories where parents are bad, again, I'm not talking about where they're dangerous to their children, where they're abusive. That's a much more complicated child. But you know, they weren't very good to their children. They didn't provide for them in the best of ways. They didn't help them out. Whatever the case may be, you still have a chiyuv to be mechabed them. It doesn't take off because the chiyuv to be mechabed one's parents is the fact that they put you into this world. That you can't undo. But that's not true for in-laws. Your in-laws didn't put you into this planet. So why do you have a chiyuv to be mechabed them? So I always have a yisoid that the reason why a person has to honor his parents and his in-laws and even his grandparents and maybe even his older brother is coming from a different nekuda. It's not so much that they put you on this planet, but there are certain people in this world that you're supposed to be able to rely on. There are certain people in this world that are supposed to be able to bail you out of whatever predicament you find yourself in. Whether it be financially, whether it be emotionally, whether it be physical. There are certain people that you can turn to for help and guidance. And those people that you can turn to are people you have to respect in return. So I always felt that in-laws and parents fit that criteria. Grandparents should fit that criteria. And maybe even an older brother, Achiv HaGadol, is a concept of Kibbutz Achiv HaGadol. An older brother is also someone, he's older than you, he's wiser than you. When you get in trouble, you get into a fight in the park, you get in trouble in yeshiva, who's going to come help you? You call your older brother, he's going to come help you. I think that's where, in my opinion, where the Chi of Kibbutz comes from all of these people. Itaka is a Tzad Hashem, it's not a different mumbus. They're all really under the same reason. There's certain people in life that you should be, again, should be able to. And hopefully in a good relationship, that's what grandparents are. Right? I always tell my kids, I can't wait to be grandparents because the kids go home at the end of the day. It's fantastic to be grandparents. You don't have to deal with the PTA. You don't have to deal with all the nitty gritty. You just get to be there for all the good stuff. And you spoil them. That's what grandparents, I love when people say, oh, I'm spoiling my grandchildren. That's what you're supposed to do. That's why Kodesh Baruch Hu made grandparents to spoil grandchildren. That's the Gansa Tafkid HaChayim. But it's more than that. It's that they're there when you're in trouble, when you're in a bind, and sometimes you can't go to your parents, or your parents can't help you. You turn to your grandparents. Listen, maybe you can help me. Maybe you can get me out of that. And in return, you have a chiyuv to be mechabedim. So lefiza maybe taka are both found in this week's parasha is very apropos. But in any case, so Moshe Rabbeinu meets up with Yisrael. So what does he do? So the pasuk says, "Vayisaper Moshe lechosnim." Moshe tells over to his father-in-law. All that happened to Paro and Mitzrayim, Aloidois Yisrael. So the obvious kasha is, what's he telling Yisrael that Yisrael didn't hear already? Yisrael heard all this. That's why Yisrael came. So what's Moshe Rabbeinu? He's going to chew his ear off. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to tell him what he already knows. Moshe Rabbeinu, Yisrael heard all this story. That's why Yisrael came. Yisrael was following all the social media. He was following all the newspapers. And he was reading story after story about Bnei Yisrael. And he said, Givaldik, I'm coming. So he comes to town and Moshe Rabbeinu chooses ear off. What's Moshe Rabbeinu adding to the story? So Rabbi Yaakov Neiman says that what he was adding is that it's not the same Madrega to hear it from the Rebbe. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rebbe of Klal Yisrael. It's not the same to hear it from a secondary source than you hear it from Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Brisker Rav pointed out that when a person is so mole, you know, Hakar Satoiv and Simcha, he can just keep on talking. He never runs out of people to tell it over to. And they say over a story with the Biskarov that one of the Biskarov's children was late Shabbos morning of his Shabbos Sheva Brachas. He was late to Shul, and the Biskarov was starting to get very nervous. Why is he late to Shul? So they went to the apartment he was staying with his newly married wife, and they knocked on the door, no one answered. They banged on the door. So Nebuch, there was some form of a carbon monoxide or some form of a gas leak in the apartment, and they were mamish where they would have died. A few minutes later, they would have died. So the Biskurov spent the whole Shabbos just telling over everyone he could see, telling over the story over and over and over again. When a person's very, very makir toiv and very grateful, he just keeps on telling over the story. I was at a Beis Avol the other day, and there was a fellow talking about his COVID experience. The guy was mamish a walking nace. He was a COVID miracle. His wife told me they pretty much gave up on him. For 30 days, he was not with us so much in this world. And he came back, and he couldn't walk. And I'm just watching him tell it over. And you just see it. And mamish felt this pshat. That when a person is so moly simcha of what happened, he can't get enough of it. He's so grateful. He wasn't doing this b'teres gaiva for this guy. He was so grateful. His heart was so full of simcha HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving him a second chance. He just needed to keep on telling it over. I think they say over from Chaim Kanievsky that when a person experiences an ace, he's got to be mefarsimit. Tell it over. Be marbi kvayt shemayim in the world. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to do. Other people say that what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to do was Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to explain to Yisrael that what happened in Mitzrayim wasn't just to punish the Mitzrayim. Because again, we spoke about this the other week, that part of what happened in Mitzrayim was a punishment for the Mitzrayim, and part of it was a love for us. So Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Paray, don't think this was all just punishment for the Mitzrayim. No, there was a deep love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the Jewish people. So the pasuk tells us, "Vayichad Yisroi al kol hatoiva asher osa Hashem Yisroel," and Yisroi rejoiced. That's the lashon Vayichad. Yisroi rejoiced on all the good that Hashem did for the Jewish people. Asher hitzilo mi haMitzrayim, that He saved them from the Mitzrayim. So we know the lashon Vayichad. Rashi has two pshatim. One pshat in Rashi, Vayichad, means that he cut himself. Asin chadudin chadudin. And the other pshat is Yisroi was rejoiced. So the two pshatim are very, very opposite pshatim. So one of the pshatim they want to say is that the cutting over here is referring to the milah. That Yisrael gave himself a milah, and he did that besimcha. He did the milah besimcha. That's the combination of ayichad and the besimcha. The other pshat mefarshim point out is, you learn from over here something very interesting. Why was Yisrael cutting himself? Because he was depressed over the fact that the Mitzrayim were destroyed. Now, how many years is Yisrael out of Mitzrayim? He ran away from Mitzrayim. But you see, he still had a loyalty. So says the Bali Musa, if Yisrael still felt that loyalty to Mitzrayim, shouldn't we feel that loyalty to Klal Yisrael? We should feel bad when something never happens sadly to another Jew. The same way Yisrael felt bad about what happened to Mitzrayim, even though he was so detached from Mitzrayim, we too should feel agmas nefesh, pain and suffering, when we hear things that happen to fellow Jews that are much more connected to us, much closer connection that we have. Okay. One of the pshatim we mentioned earlier is that Yisrael had a bris milah. Yisrael had a bris milah. Now the problem with Yisrael having a bris milah is that Chazal tell us that no one had a bris milah when they were in the Midbar. So if no one had a bris milah when they were in the Midbar, so how was Yisrael allowed to have a bris milah? So the answer that they say over is that Yisrael wanted to join the Jewish people. If you want to join the Jewish people, there's certain things you have to do. One of the things you have to have is a bris milah. So a regular Jew who's already part of Klal Yisrael, so he has a mitzvah to do a bris milah. So then the Torah says that if it's just a mitzvah, you're not allowed to put yourself in danger to do a mitzvah. The Chai Bohem, you're not allowed to put yourself in danger to do a mitzvah. But for Yisrael, milah wasn't the mitzvah. For Yisrael, milah was a tenai. It was a condition. You can't join the Jewish people unless you have a bris milah. So therefore, even if Yisrael would have died in milah, he would have had to take the chance. So therefore, Yisrael was allowed to take the chance to see if he'd be able to survive the milah and ultimately join the Jewish people. There's a famous ma'aseh with Reb Chaim Moizer. Reb Chaim Moizer went collecting for the Vada Yeshivas to a very wealthy man's house. And he comes into the man's house, and the man has a sign, has a plaque in his door, on the wall, that says that I hereby, was signed by a certain gadol, that says I hereby give haskama to this fellow who's a ger. He did tefillah, but he never did milah because he has a blood clotting problem. But nonetheless, he's still a ger because he couldn't do bris milah signed by a chashev yid. So Chaim Moizer tells the yid, maybe after he got the check from the yid, he says, by the way, I want you to know you're not Jewish, because that's not true. We paskin that you need to have that milah as a tenai in becoming Jewish. Even if you have a medical condition, it doesn't help. So Reb Zalman Sirotsky, when he heard this story, he was mitzayin to this week's parasha. He said, look at Yisrael. Yisrael knew that if he wanted to become Jewish, there's only one way. He's got to get the bris milah. Even if Yisrael couldn't handle it because it was in the midbar, it was dangerous. It doesn't matter. You need to have a bris milah. Without a bris milah, you're not Jewish. So Reb Chaim Moser liked the comparison to this week's parasha. But Reb Chaim Moser had to tell this Jew who thought he was Jewish that, by the way, you're talking not Jewish. So what happens? Yisrael makes a very important declaration. Yisrael says, Vayomer Yisrael, Baruch Hashem. Blessed is Hashem Asher Hitzil Eschem Miyad Mitzrayim Miyad Paroi. Blessed is the God who saved you from the Egyptians and from Paroi. Asher Hitzil Eschem Mitachas Yad Mitzrayim. He saved his nation from under the hands of Mitzrayim. So this seems like a very innocent comment by Yisrael. However, the Gemara says in Masechas Sanhedrin that this comment stirred a big kitrug on Klal Yisrael. The Gemara says, why was Yisrael the first person to say the words Baruch Hashem? The Jewish people never declared Baruch Hashem until Yisrael came to town. Why did no one declare Baruch Hashem until Yisrael came? Why was Yisrael the first one to say it? That's the Gemara. So the question is, how are we supposed to understand this Gemara? What does the Gemara mean by that? So that's something you have to think about. Why was Yisrael the first one to say Baruch Hashem and no one else thought of this recognition of Baruch Hashem? Okay, we got to get moving. I see we're up against the clock and we still didn't even get out of the first Aliyah. So what happens? Yisrael comes and the Ganze Klal Yisrael follows him. They have a party. They bring karbonos. They have iron. They eat bread. So all the mafreshim are bothered. What bread? You told me they're eating karbonos. They're eating karbonos. Why is there bread? And the mafreshim have another kasha. Where did you get bread from? What bread? Who had bread in the desert? We had mon. So this is a very strong raya. It's not really mafreshim last week's parasha that the mon was called lecha. There's always a big kasha. What bracha do you make on the mon? Right? Was there a bracha rishayin on the mon? What was the bracha rishayin? So some people say it would be hamoitzi lechem, not min haaretz. Hamoitzi lechem min hashemayim, because the mon came from shemayim. But the Chibina Rav had a gevaldig chiddush. The Chibina Rav said in last week's parsha, there was a svarno in last week's parsha. The svarno said that why couldn't they collect the mon on Shabbos? What malacha would they have violated? So the svarno says it would have been considered a kaitzer. It would have been considered uprooting the mon from the ground. So it's up to Chibina Rav. If the mon is considered attached to the ground, and if you'd pick up the mon, you'd be Ivy Kaitzer. So then the bracha Rishayin would be by Ripri Adama, grows from the ground. The extent that it's part of the ground for the Malacha of Kaitzer, it's part of the ground for by Ripri Adama. But in any case, and then before Shem over hit Tumul, where exactly did they get all the excess bread for? But they had a party. They had a party. So the Mefarshim pointed out that this party was Yisrael's Sudas Bris Milah. This was Yisrael's Sudas Bris Milah. Yisrael just joined the Jewish people, he had his bris, and this is his Sudas Bris Milah. And therefore the Mefarshim say, this is why Moshe Rabbeinu served at the party. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was a little bit nisrashel with the mitzvah of Bris Milah. He got to the whole issue with Tzipporah. Tzipporah had to do the Bris Milah. So in order to be misaking that, Moshe Rabbeinu had to be serving this Sudas Bris Milah to be misaking that problem. Okay, so let's go weiter. So Yisrael sees what's going on. And Yisrael watches Moshe Rabbeinu. He comes to see what his shver does what his son-in-law does for a day. And he watches Moshe Rabbeinu conduct himself, and he doesn't like it. He says, no good. He doesn't like what's going on. He doesn't like the way Moshe Rabbeinu is holding court. He says, what didn't he like about what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing? So Rashi learns, he didn't like that Moshe Rabbeinu was a one-man show. Moshe Rabbeinu was running everything by himself, and all the Jewish people are waiting for him. It's not right. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one-man show. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu say back to Yisrael? Moshe Rabbeinu, the Ramban over here says, Gevaldik. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yisrael, you have to understand. Let me explain to you what my job is. I have three jobs. Right? I have three jobs. I'm a Rebbe, I'm a Rav, and I'm a Rosh Hashiva. What does that mean? So the Ramban points out that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling him, I have three jobs. My first job is, I'm a Shtickel Rebbe. People come to me, they want to know what's going to be with their kids. Are the kids going to get healthy? Are they going to stay healthy? I'm like a Rebbe. And then I'm a Rav. I pass in Shailos. V'shafatati bein Yishu bein Re'eu. And my last job is Vaidati Yischuk Elikim. I teach Torah. So he was explaining to him, he was explaining to his father, listen, let me explain to you what I do. I sometimes father-in-laws don't understand what their son-in-laws do for a living. They don't get the whole gamut of their job. So my Shailos was saying, listen, I wear three hats. I have three jobs. One of my job is I teach Torah. My other job is I pass in Shailos. My other job is to tell people what's going to be in the future. So Yisrael comes and he says, Moshe Rabbeinu, I have to change things up. I think you should institute a system of judges. You shouldn't be a one-man show. It shouldn't be a one-man show. Hold on one second.
Sorry about that.
So Yisro's idea was it shouldn't be a one-man show, Moshe Rabbeinu. You have to allow other people to be involved. And the truth is, many of the Farshim point out Yisro's idea was ingenious for a couple of reasons. It was not just ingenious so Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't burn out, which is very possible. Moshe Rabbeinu could burn out. But if Moshe Rabbeinu was the only person deciding halachas, so we're not going to be able to have nothing could be a machoikis. There's one way. Moshe Rabbeinu's way. That's it. There's no two tzadim. There's no mechaber amah. There's no two opinions. There's only Moshe Rabbeinu's way. So in order to open up Klal Yisrael for room for disagreements and different ways of looking at things, we have to have this idea. Hey, there's so much to get to. I thought we'd get to so much. So what does Yisro say? Yisro says, I want you to hire people. Who should you take? So he says, I want you to take. I want to get to that also. He says, I want you to take Anshei Chayil. I want you to take people that are Anshei Chayil. Rashi says Anshei Chayil means people that are wealthy. Yiri Elekim, people who fear God. Anshei Emes, honest people. Soini Batsa, people that hate money. I want you to a long list of requirements. And who's Moshe Rabbeinu take? So Moshe Rabbeinu takes Anshei Chayil. So the Mefarshim were all bothered. That wasn't what Yisro asked. Yisro said, I have a whole list of things I need you to get. Why'd you cut the list just to Anshei Chayil? Anshei Chayil means people of soldiers. So I saw a beautiful word from Abelio Chaim Meizel. Is that his name? I got it right? Abelio Chaim was the Rav in Lodz. One of the great Rabbanim in Lodz. Abelio Chaim Meizel. He was Nifter in 1912. He was, they say over that he gave Reb Chaim Soloveitchik Smicha. Okay? He was a big gadol. So he said the following pshat. He said like this. He said, the Medrash tells us that the mon fell in front of the doors of Chacham. Meaning big Chacham didn't have to travel to get the mon. And it also fell at the doors of Zikanim. Those were the two people where it fell in front of. So he said like this. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu could have known very quickly what a person's status is by what? By going out and seeing where the mon falls. And if he's Taka Yerele Kim, the mon falls at his door. The only problem is you don't know if the mon falls at his door because he's a tzaddik or just because he's old. Zakti b'Leo Chayim, that's why you just need to know Anshei Chayil. Once you know the guy is not old, he's a soldier, so therefore automatically you know he must be a Yerushalayim. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't need to do the same background checks that Yisro wanted because he had the mon to tell him who's what. He just needed to know if the person was elderly versus being an Anshei Chayil. Once I know he's a soldier, he's not old, so then if the mon falls in front of him, I know he's Taka Yerelekin. So therefore, I didn't have to know. Very, very nice of art from the Rav and Lodz. We didn't get to a lot of what we were supposed to get to, but it's already late, and I want to take into consideration people's time. So we have over here, the story ends that Yisro gives his advice, and then Yisro leaves. So he goes back. Why doesn't Yisro stick around? So the joke everyone says is because if you come and give advice to your son-in-law, give the advice and then leave. Don't stick around. Don't be a nudnik. Don't stand over his shoulder to see what he does. You should just leave. Now the truth is not even so posh that Moshe Rabbeinu took his advice so fast. Right? The Lashon sounds like Vayishma Moshe l'kol choisnei. So the Malbim points out, Vayishma Moshe l'kol choisnei doesn't mean he did it right away. He listened. He said, yeah, good idea. We'll get to it later. He didn't have it right away. He didn't set it up maybe for some time still. But he took it to heart, the advice that was given. Then we have Kabbalah Satorah, which we're not going to have any time to get to it. So Mr. Hashem, next year, we're going to have to talk about Kabbalah Satorah. But I'll just mention a vort from the Chidush Erim, the great Ger Rebbe. Two vorts from the Ger Rebbe. And Blin Eder will close with that. So we all know the Chidush Erim points out that one of the things that happened at Kabbalah Satorah was there was an isser of going too high up on the mountain. You were limited where you were allowed to go. So the Chidush Erim said that we know the Chazal tell us that all the other nations before they got to Torah, they asked Maksivbe. What does it say in the Torah? So each nation were told the thing that they struggle with. So Frek the Chidush Erim, what did it say for the Jewish people? So he said they got the din of Igbalta Sa'ar. To be restricted, when you want to reach for spiritual growth, for spiritual connection, you're told, no, you can't go up that mountain. Says the Chidush Erim, that's what the Jewish people were tempted, that's what they were told. That before you want to join Klaiso, Daphne Vissen, you have to know, you can't go wherever you want. You can't just walk, because I want to be frumer, I'm going to jump on top of the mountain, you're not allowed to do that. Reb Rudiman points out a different part. Reb Rudiman points out that the Torah writes two places that you're not allowed to. The Torah reminds us twice that you're not allowed to go too up on the mount, too high on the mount. In fact, the Reb Rudiman, why does the Torah have to bring the point? You know, the Klai Yisrael is on such a high madriga. Just tell them once, and they'll get the point. So Reb Rudiman says, you see from over here how severe a chet is. But I want to say a different yisoid. I said, you see from over here how easily it is when people are doing things what they consider Lashem Shemayim, how easily you can make a mistake. Again, they're claiming, we want to go up the mountain, not for any other reason, but we want to go close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem says, I don't want you. I don't care. This is something we've spoken many times in the past, very often the people, when it comes to matters of spirituality, people break all the rules because it's a from Mizrach. So here Hashem says, no, I don't want you going high. Don't go up on the mountain. Don't try to claim that it's a firmer thing. I don't want it, and I don't need you doing it. One last word from the Chedushim. The Chedushim was a small boy. He was a child prodigy. So they asked the Chedusherim, Akasha. We know it says that by the Seres Dibris, it says they were Royim Es HaKoylus. They saw the Koylus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they saw the sounds of the Dibris. So they asked the Chedushim, when he was a child, why was it that way? So the Chedush Rim said, because if it wouldn't have been that way, so people could have claimed that when it says in the Seres Dibros, Loi Sirtzach, it's not Loi mit an Aleph, it's Loi mit Avav. Loi to him, Sirtzach, you should kill. So the Chedush Rim explained as a child, he said, you can make the same mistake. You can say to yourself, it's a Frum Cheshbon. Hashem wants me to do this. Loi to him, it's to Hashem. I'm doing the Ritzicha and the Gneva and all that. So if the Chedush Rim said as a child, that's why Hashem had to make it Loi mit an Aleph. So everyone should know, no. We have to see the Lam and Aleph, not just here, because when you hear Loi, it can either be with a Vav or with an Aleph. So therefore, says the Chedushim, this is as a child. The Torah was telling us that we have to know that it's not Loi with a Vav, it's Loi with an Aleph. No, Hashem does not want us killing. Hashem does not want us stealing. There's no Cheshbonus of the Shem Shemayim in these types of things. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, we didn't get to the whole Parsha. Have a wonderful Shabbos. We'll see everyone in Mitzvah Shem in person on Sunday morning.